is one win. Not gonna look too much farther ahead than the next game. There's no reason to, and it's gonna gear up to that and get ready to go and go back and compete, and we'll see where it goes.
7:03 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour two of the program. Mike Hyka from DallasStars.com is going to join us in just a second here to kick off hour two. Hour two is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net.
Last night, the Dallas Stars live to fight another day. They will go back to Vegas for Game 5 of the Western Conference Final on Saturday. Joining us now from DallasStars.com, Mike Hyka here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, lads?
We are well, thank you. How much better was it at American Airlines between Game 4 and then what happened in Game 3?
100%. I've been doing this for a while, and that was one of, I know they don't like to hear the word embarrassing, but it was one of the most embarrassing nights from, you know, just the way the team played and then the way the fans reacted. You know, they had their villains back in the day with Darian Hatcher breaking Roenick's jaw and some other stuff. But the arena was always really classy. Like Patrick Waugh, I think, set a record on one night and the fans gave a standing ovation. I think Ovechkin got a standing ovation here. And it was very, as a reporter, you're proud to be a part of a group of fans who, one, recognize those things, and two, you know, respond and are classy about it. And I was talking to a friend yesterday, day four, about, like, the biggest problem I have with all of this is they were wrong, okay? The refs were right. The refs were doing their job, and they're mad at the refs for doing their job. I mean, it's just a bad look. They should have been mad at the team, and they probably were mad at the team, but to respond the way they did, it really was bad. And then, it was good. They needed a game like that, you know, just to hopefully clear the palate and you know, potentially get back here for a game six.
You know, I'm interested by that because when the game three stuff happened in the aftermath, I do remember thinking, okay, it's a bad night at the rink and it's not going the way that they want, but it was not by any stretch the most egregious thing I'd ever seen in hockey or in Dallas Stars history. Like, yeah, they didn't play well. But the Ben penalty, I thought, was justified. I didn't think the officiating was especially egregious in a bad way. Was it just a combination of factors, or was it just one of those nights where the fans kind of became unglued?
Yeah, what I think happened, and I think it was everybody, we always talk about poise, and they've actually shown pretty good poise in the playoffs at times. They've been up and down, but when everything has gotten really dialed up, like last night, they actually play a smart, calm game. You know, there's intensity, obviously, because there's desperation. But in that desperation, they have found poise. And so they give up that goal a minute into the game. And then Ben comes out for his first shift, and I think he just lost it. I don't think he wanted to put it on, obviously, on Stone's neck. I think he was trying to, you know, check his shoulder, but check it hard. And you know, kind of send a message. He's done that before. And also fire up his team, I think, you know, because the physical play does help at times. But then once that happened, and then once they gave up the goals, and then once they pulled Jake, it was everybody was mad. And so then when Domi went and had his slash near the end of the second period, he was rightfully called out. And rightfully penalized, and then the fans just went bonkers because they wanted to blame somebody, and they choose to blame the refs.
Do you think that Game 3 was just an outlier, or let's say Dallas isn't able to pull off the miracle and they lose, let's say they lose their next game in Vegas. Does that Game 3 become part of the calculus for any off-season decisions?
I don't think so. We have talked a lot about that, too. I mean, because the decision, one would think, would be Jamie. And I think, you know, he's just done so many good things. I think the people within the organization believe it was an accident, you know, that it wasn't, you know, a malicious play of any sort. He was trying to send a message, like I said, with a cross check to the shoulder. He missed on that. But even if it was, if it's short wired or whatever, he's built up enough credibility that everybody's going to support him. In that regard, I don't think, any off-season changes would come from it.
What about Max Domi?
Well, Max is going to be tough no matter what. Because one, Dadanoff's played better, I think. I know Max has the points, but Dadanoff's been really good. And I don't know that they can keep them both. If you were just to ask me right now, I think they would pursue Dadanoff and let Domi go to free agency. If Domi likes it so much here that he's willing to take a really team-friendly deal, then that might be something they talk about because he has scored points. But it's an interesting dynamic on this team because you want physicality, but you don't want over-the-board physicality. Jamie's pretty good at it. Mason Marchman is not. He will, take bad penalties. He will make mistakes. And you are committed to him for the next 3 years at $4 million. So now how many of those guys can you have on the team? And I like Max. Max's skill is amazing. But again, do you need that guy who is unpredictable? And how many of them do you need? I mean, how many can you have? I mean, Jamie at times can do this. Marchman at times can do this. Do you really want to, bring another guy in who can do this? And at what cost? The one good thing about Domi is I think he's signing 1 or 2 year deals right now. And the Stars are, they're going to have to pay Robertson. They're going to have to pay Ottinger more. Wyatt Johnston, he's got 2 years left before he hits his bridge deal. So they have contracts coming that are going to cost money. Now, Pavelski will come off the books, in a year or two. Jamie, I think, has 2 years left on his deal. So they look at all of those little pieces. The one great thing about the Stars, I think, is they have a bunch of good young players. The guess is Stankoven is on the NHL roster next year. Mm-hmm. He's been that good. They've seen with Wyatt Johnston that a 19, 20-year-old can play in the NHL. That's a forward spot right there that's already taken. And then they have to make decisions on some other guys. But I don't think that what Domi did affects his ability to re-sign. I think the fact that he's probably a $3 or $4 million player affects his ability to come back.
The Stars are such a uniquely constructed team because right now they're, of the final four. So they're in their competitive window. Absolutely. At the same time, you can't say that this might be their only kick at it because Robertson and Heiskanen and Ottinger are all good young players, borderline superstar young players. They all came from the same draft. And then, as you mentioned, there's other guys on the horizon that are going to be joining this group. So with that background, I got to ask, if the Stars do lose this series, will this season be seen as a positive or will it be seen as a disappointment? Because this group that does have Ben and Sagan and Pavelski, that group is running out of time, but the future for the rest of them seems pretty bright.
Yeah, it is. It's a balancing on the fence. It will be seen as a disappointment for a handful of players. Pavelski would really love to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, everybody would, obviously, but he's playing some of the best hockey of his career right now, and he's helping put the team in a great place. And, he does. He has, a year or 2 years left. And then, Ben, he's only 34, I think. So he should have a few years left to do this. But if you ever saw the picture of him in the locker room after the loss to Tampa Bay in the bubble, I think he understands just how hard it is even to get back. You look at what Boston did this year, you look at Colorado and, it's hard. It's a process. I go back to, 98, 99, 2000. Dallas may have been the best team in the league for 3 or 4 years. They won 2 President's Trophies and they won 1 cup. You know, I mean, Vancouver is a great example of, you know, you get there, but you know, it takes something. I don't know if it's luck or just, you know, the right cards or whatever it is to win it all. And so, yeah, it's really hard. And if they do miss, those players will be very disappointed. On the other hand, if you're a fan and you're just looking at the organization, Jim Nels put him in a great spot, and all the scouts with their drafting. You know, you look at Stankoven, I think he's going to be great. I mean, you guys know better than anybody up there if he has the ability to do this at the NHL level. Then you look at what Thomas Harley's done. He looks like a top four NHL defenseman already, and he's just 21. They've got some guys in the minors. The Texas Stars team played very well. So I think they're in a good place. That Bixel kid who, you know, he broke his leg, I think, in practice for the World Championships. But they I think he'll be back, and he'll be a good player as well. So they have a lot of good things that they, you know, can be excited about for the future.
Mike, thanks a lot for doing this today, man. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game on Saturday. Should be a good one.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That's Mike Hajka from DallasStars.com here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Okay, let's do some Ask Us Anythings. It's Ask Us Anything Friday on the Halford and Brough Show, and that means you, the listener, can text in any question you want of us. It can be about sports. It can be about entertainment. It can be about life, love, whatever you want.
Food.
Food is a big one.
Yeah.
Marcus and Gibson's Ask Us Anything. If you had to name a kid after your favorite athlete, what would their name be?
Barbaro.
The horse? Is that your favorite athlete of all time?
One of my favorites.
You just can't accept that you actually have a favorite human athlete. So you're just like, I like this horse. He was pretty fast.
My favorite, everyone knows that my favorite athlete of all time is Steve Nash.
Yeah.
I didn't name my kid Nash. Nash is kind of a cool name.
You wouldn't go with Steve?
Probably go with Nash.
He lives on the West Coast. It's Nash.
Yeah. Mm. You have to take their surname.
Nash would be a cool name. You have to. No, I don't think you have to take their surname. You don't have to take their surname.
Steve's too common.
You have to like their name, and it has to still be a fit, right? Like, it's crazy. The first athlete that came to mind, I was like, who did I like love as an athlete? I'm like, Marshawn Lynch. I don't even know if I'd name my kid Marshawn
or Lynch.
Lynch. This is Lynch.
There'd be a lot of Pavels in Vancouver.
You know what?
Up.
Now that I hear it, it sounds kind of cool. I don't know if the connotations would be so great.
No, the connotations. Yeah. Like, what was he named after?
By the way, on this note, do you know any parents that have had a kid and named them Kessler? Because I have been I know one, and I have been told that got to be a pretty popular
Kessler
is a first name. That there's multiple Kesslers in the Lower Mainland.
Really? I know there's a ton of Lindens.
Yeah, there's a ton of Lindens.
Yeah.
That's an earlier generation, but I guess anyone that was having kids or making the babies back in 2011 specifically, I think that was a thing because the name actually, I mean, look, just on its own, Kessler kind of sounds cool.
Yeah.
It's got a certain, I don't know, je ne sais quoi.
There's
got
to be a Canucks fan out there that had twins and named them Daniel and Henrik. There has to be.
Maybe.
Oh,
That's way too on the nose, though.
But that's
you're a Canucks fan. Would you want it to be on the nose?
Yeah, I
text in. People need to text in right now.
That's like a Canucks themed wedding almost, right? Like,
I'm not saying I would do it.
But it's lifelong.
I'm not saying I would do it.
No, yeah.
But I'm sure somebody has.
But then they don't get their, you know, like every question that they get. So every year they start school, let's say they're in the same class. I don't know if they put twins in the same class, but whatever.
Sometimes they do.
They're in the same class. Daniel and Henrik? Oh, were you named after the Canucks? Like, and they're like, yeah, I hate hockey now. Because of this.
I'm trying to think if there's any other ones that I'd put in the mix. I think Nash would be it. Nash, there's certain, like you said, certain surnames that wouldn't work, but I think Nash is like a pretty decent. Nash Bridges, he's popular.
Yeah, totally popular. Mike in Aldergrove, Ask Us Anything. Is Kelowna considered a destination wedding? And am I required to get a wedding gift? Okay, so the idea behind this would be that if there's a destination wedding and you have to pay a bunch of money to get there, to stay there, then you don't have to give the couple a big gift or a gift at all. Is that the idea behind that?
That's the genesis of his question, is that there's an understanding that you're not inconveniencing your guests, but you're asking a lot of your guests to go on a destination wedding. Ergo, you shouldn't be expecting an envelope full of cash.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Cologne. Here's the
kicker. Depends where you're staying and how much you're paying, I think.
I think I have the right answer, though.
No?
No. You make it a point of so you fly to Kelowna.
Yeah.
You upgrade your lodging so it's more expensive. And then you tell everybody at the wedding that you flew there and you got an expensive lodging. It might sound pretentious or borderline douchey, but it'll get you out of that envelope of cash.
CJ the plumber, ask us anything. What do you think about the probability of Calgary buying out Markstrom to bring up their star AHL goalie to tandem with Vladar for next season? Then that opens up the Canucks to sign Markey to a cheap 1 or 2 year league minimum contract and getting him working with Ian Clark to turn.
Don't think it's
going to
happen, but I like the idea.
Is this making its rounds on the streets? Is this what the streets are saying? Is this internet talk? What's going on here? Where's this coming from?
I think it's coming from CJ the plumber's brain.
Nice. Well, I respect it.
I'm worried about Markstrom, you guys. I said this on Twitter.
Would you buy him out? Would you consider it? Would you have the conversation if you were the new management group in Calgary? So you're Craig Conroy. Would that be something that would come up at a brainstorming meeting?
I think you explore the possibility of it. I don't think that's the route they're going to go. I think you
try to trade him?
I think you try to salvage him first. I think there's still...
But you're worried about him.
Well, I'm worried about him in the injury sense. He is a very large man. And goaltending these days is not easy on the body. We saw what happened to Robin Lehner. We saw what happened to Ben Bishop, similar size.
Sure.
Look up what age Ben Bishop was when his body decided to quit.
He was too tall. He was like 6'8".
Markstrom's not that much shorter.
6'8"'s like too much.
I know, but it's in that range. So I'm hoping his problems aren't a physical one because that's much harder to revitalize than just getting him back on track.
Right, and if you have that information at your hands, if you have the medical reports about Jacob Markstrom, then obviously you're going to be able to make a more informed decision. But the goaltending situation in Calgary is going to be fascinating with Dustin Wolf capable probably now of starting to play NHL games. More than capable. But I think we've seen this in multiple markets. How many times have we seen this team has had 3 or 4 goalies play for them this season? That happens all the time. I don't think you should necessarily be in the business of trading away goalies like Jacob Markstrom and saying, okay, well, we're really hoping to bounce back next season. Let's go with Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar.
Vladar was good this year. He was good.
Yeah.
He had numbers.
It would be a huge risk, though, unless you had something earmarked for the Markey cap hit, and you could get rid of Markey's cap hit entirely, like buying him out.
I wish more teams would do bold stuff like that, though, with their goalies. You never see it. Never see them do that bold move and just go with a younger guy.
Other than
the Flyers and Hart.
You know what's going to be fascinating is that we're going to have a scenario here where it's probably going to be Florida and Vegas in the Stanley Cup final, right? It's going to be Sergei Bobrovsky. Does he have one of the highest cap hits for
Price
goalie
might be higher,
in the NHL? Like, Vasilevsky might be up there. I don't know. But he's got a massive cap hit for a goalie. And then versus Aiden Hill as the starter. Now, you can look at Vegas and say, wow, it's not like they rolled the dice on some league minimum guys because they paid Lehner. They've got him for a lot of money. So they actually did make the decision to go with the
But they didn't
the starter,
stop there.
Right?
They didn't stop at Lehner. They compiled a whole bunch of league average guys and eventually paid
Is
off,
that what you
right?
do? Would you compile a bunch of goalies and then just see who was playing better, see who won the competition?
Let them fight to the death.
Then I suppose you get into the issue in the playoffs sometimes where you put your coach in a position where he's got to make a very tough decision about who to start. But
you remember the Minnesota goalie tandem? That was funny. Lasted one game. Remember that at the beginning of the playoffs? That was hilarious. Yeah.
It was what we did all season. Just not anymore. It's the most fascinating position in the NHL because you have these goalies that have the potential to play amazing for a very low salary. Very rarely will you see, or never will you see, a guy, like let's say a center on a league minimum deal, and all of a sudden he's performing like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby.
right?
Mm-hmm. That or a number one defenseman. It doesn't happen.
Yeah,
it's impossible. But I guess because there's so few goalie spots available in the NHL, that you have these talented guys that are perfectly capable of playing at a high level. It's just a question of how long can they do it for? It's like, you know, Woodley and I always have this conversation. They're like golfers. Yeah, you've got the guys like, well, right now, you know, Scottie Scheffler and John Rahm, who would be the starting goalies, who would get $10 million a year, and you'd be like, I'm pretty certain that these guys are going to play well, even though once in a while, John Rahm will have a bad tournament or a bad stretch, or Scottie Scheffler will have a bad tournament or a bad stretch. Then you also get these guys that are, let's say, 50th on the money list, but they just find something in their swing, and they get hot, and they have this run, and you're like, wow, welcome to the upper echelon of golf, and then they fall apart. And then you never hear from them again.
Before we go to break, I just want to say, this is Ask Us Anything Friday is why I love our listeners, but also is a revealing, really revealing look to what our listeners think, say out loud, or willing to. So we're talking about naming your child after your famous favorite athlete or a famous athlete, right? Jerry from Kamloops writes in, my friend's dog name is Chelios. Jerry, I don't think you got the assignment. That's great. But there's a big difference between naming a dog and naming a child.
Somebody said beret.
I want to put this out there. I appreciate you wanting to take part in a conversation, but
somebody's cat is Nazzy.
And then the follow-up text from someone completely different was just the word Edison. Like, that's not even an athlete. Like, a great, great contributor to society, but I feel like we're not really
listening.
My
cat's name is Mittens.
Yeah, like, we're not getting, that's not even, that's a pet's name, and it's just an inanimate object.
I named him after my favorite gloves.
Yeah.
They're my mittens.
Sometimes when people say, do you think people are listening close enough, I'll say, I don't think so.
I like this text, too, about the destination wedding. Hey, genius, if you spend more money on lodging and a flight, you're spending more money, you know, like the thing you were trying to avoid. Yeah, but the difference is you're spending it on yourself, and that's way better than spending it on someone else.
Yeah, was that not inherent in my conversation? Like,
yeah,
I'm not driving, I'm flying. That's better.
Yeah, that's better.
And I'm not staying at the Motel 9 or whatever it's called in Kelowna.
A lot of people say that the most joy you'll ever get is giving to people.
Wrong.
It's not. It's spending money on a nice hotel room for you.
Giving to yourself.
Giving to yourself. Yeah. Giving to you. So you're giving. Yes, you're giving, but you're not giving it to, you know, a couple that's getting married.
Yeah.
Right?
You're giving it to the best person.
You're giving it to you.
So
you're giving it to the best man at the wedding, which is always, remember, you.
So to respond to that texter, I'll say, hey, genius, how you like them apples? That's right. Okay, we got to go to break. When we come back, more hockey talk to come. Actually, we're going to turn to basketball now, aren't we? That's right. I totally forgot.
Two basketballs today.
Myron Metcalf from ESPN is going to join us. Bronny James, the son of LeBron James. He had his high school graduation ceremony yesterday at Sierra Canyon. And soon he will be off to Los Angeles at USC. He'll be playing in the same city as his dad. The question is, will he be playing soon enough for the same NBA team as his dad? We'll talk to Myron Metcalf about that coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Talking all Canucks all the time. It's Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Myron Metcalf from ESPN is going to join us in just a second here. Hour two of this show is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle. You get paid. Visit them 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. So assuming he comes back to play next year in the National Basketball Association, LeBron James isn't going to be the only show in L.A. this fall. That's because his son, Bronny James, who, by the way, has like 7+ million followers on social media. He's popular. He's going to be playing in Los Angeles as well, just down the road from Crypto.com. He's going to be at USC as a freshman. It's a really cool story. There's a lot of layers to it. And our next guest recently wrote about it for ESPN. Myron Metcalf here on the Helford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Myron. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
We're good. Thanks for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it. So this was a pretty cool story that we had talked about on our show before everything happened with the Lakers and LeBron in the playoffs and then the sweep at the hands of the Nuggets and then him being kind of unclear about his future. And we've always thought, well, it's maybe or more likely probably tied to Bronny James, his son, who is on his way to USC. So given the circumstances now with LeBron playing in L.A., how big a deal is this? Is he the most prolific recruit in the history of USC basketball right now?
I mean, I think he'll be the most scrutinized athlete in college basketball in the social media era. I mean, I don't think there's been anybody bigger just because of there's never been anybody with a father who was still competing at the highest level, you know, who was still, you know, able to be one of the best players in the world in this sport. We just haven't seen it. So it's beyond USC. I mean, SC has had a ton of incredible athletes. I mean, dating back to the 60s. So, I mean, he's not the first. But just because of the circumstances and you add social media, I just don't think there's anything to compare it to ever in college basketball. I mean, if you talk about the social media era, it's not just the followers, it's his father and everything attached to that. So I just think it's a really unique microscope he's going to be under.
You mentioned in the piece that you flew out to L.A. to get a sense of his arrival. How is USC preparing for it? Because as you mentioned in the piece, the school does have some history with some fairly prolific, high-profile children of celebrities and high-profile individuals. It's not like he's the first. They have some experience, but how is USC preparing for Bronny James's arrival?
Well, yeah, I mean, USC has a bunch of famous kids, so that part's not unique for that school. He's not the first kid with a bodyguard and security details and all that stuff. But, I mean, I think it will be unique at their arena. I mean, they don't – you know, football has been huge at SC for years. Basketball hasn't. So, you know, they're going to be expecting much larger crowds. How do you make that secure for everybody involved? Potential sort of VIP entrances if LeBron and, like, other L.A. celebrities want to come through. Potentially different entrances and exits for – players. So, I mean, it could be a different experience at the Galen Center when Bronny arrives, just because of everything that comes with him. And I'm sure they were aware of that when he committed to the program. So it's not like anybody's surprised. And I think SC is really comfortable knowing they've done this on some level before, but I just don't think anyone has ever had a circumstance like this when you had a great player with his son down the street, and he wants to go play in the NBA next to his dad, and his dad happens to be the greatest player of all time. It's an interesting concoction.
Yeah, why do you choose SC and not UCLA? If you think about college sports in L.A., you're like, SC is the football school, UCLA is the basketball school.
Yeah, I think part of it is the situation. I mean, SC has a chance to really play. I mean, UCLA, I don't know kind of where he'd be in that rotation. And I think USC he'll play right away. I think the proximity to everything familiar to him matters a lot. You know, we talked about the security elements. He's playing with his buddies. I mean, Juju Watkins is the top female recruit in all of high school basketball. She's going to SC. They're friends. They went to the same high school. Isaiah Collier, who's the number one recruit in America, he's going to USC. He's friends with Bronny. So I think it's a comfort level. And I also think USC's kind of becoming the trendier school. I mean, they got the Heisman Trophy winner in Caleb Williams. They got the top boys and girls recruit in America in basketball. So I think in this NIL era, you know, there may be a shift in terms of how people perceive USC and UCLA with this next generation of athletes.
How much money could he make?
Well, he doesn't need money, so that's the good part, like if you're Bronny James.
It's always nice to have your own, though, right? You're like, Dad, I don't want to ask you for money.
Yeah, he could make more than anybody ever in the NIL era, and that's only been a couple of years. But, I mean, you know, there are some athletes who've crossed $2, 3, 4, 5 million in college sports so far. He could certainly probably double that. I mean, Bronny, because of his dad, and he's already done some ads with his dad, because of his dad, has a chance to make more than anybody could even perceive. You know, he's got beats by Dre already. So, I mean, he could definitely make over $10 million in this year alone, I'm sure. And that might be modest, just depending on kind of how good he is. Like, if he comes out and he's pretty good and his dad kind of leans into it and they do a lot of the father-son stuff, the sky's the limit, I think, on how much money he could make. But it's good to be a college kid who knows you don't need it.
How good is he?
We'll find out. I mean, I think he's an incredible he's a good player. He's very versatile, all around, really good player. He doesn't have one thing that really stands out and kind of makes you go, wow, this is what he'll do best at the next level. But, you know, I think there are a lot of guys in the NBA like that. So if the idea is he has to be his father and be the greatest player of all time, well, that's not going to happen. You know, he's not 6'8", and there's only one LeBron. But if the idea is he's working his way into potentially becoming a NBA role player, which 90% of the NBA is role players, I think that's feasible. Physically, he's very gifted. You know, at 6'3", he has a really strong frame, clearly doing his father's workouts and eating whatever he's eating. One of the smartest players out there at that age, just like his father, who might be the smartest player in NBA history. And I think he's just going to be a guy who kind of finds the right spots. It'll come down to how well he shoots, you know, in terms of how much he plays. But if he can be a decent shooter, he's going to play a ton. And I think right away also he'll be a really good defensive player. So, I mean, Bronny will be good, but I just don't know that there's any way he could ever match expectations, because there are going to be some people who just think if you're not like your dad, then you've somehow fallen short. That's dumb, but that's how people think.
We're speaking to Myron Metcalf from ESPN here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Myron, I know that it's been well documented and well stated that the goal is for LeBron and Bronny to play together in the NBA. Covering this story and following it for as long as you have, do you know if the goal is for them to play together with the Lakers?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, LeBron's entering the last year of his deal with the Lakers if he decides to stay. And, you know, it's going to come down to what is Bronny's realistic NBA potential after his first year. You know, I can tell you there are people who think it'll be 3 years before he can think about being ready. At the same time, I don't think he's staying for 3 years. I think he's going to leave after 1 year and hope somebody thinks that he can fill a role, and the potential that LeBron, who will be in a position to sign as a free agent, will go wherever his son is. And I've talked to NBA executives who, you know, I talked to one in particular who was like, listen, if we had the 16th or 17th pick and we can add Bronny and we're getting LeBron with the core we already have, and this is a team that's a playoff team, he said, of course we'd do it. You know, so I think that element is going to factor into everything, like that you might be able to get a package deal, and I do think that is the goal. But, you know, the NBA is a very, very difficult place to play, and I don't think there's a world where Bronny just gets a spot on an active NBA roster just because he's LeBron James' son. He's going to have to play his way, I think, into kind of earning real minutes. But if you tell me he can get drafted by a team and they sign his dad, yeah, I think that's very real.
In doing all your research on Bronny James, did you ever find out, like, what kind of sports dad was LeBron James? Was he a dad that really pushed his kids in sports? Or there are some athletes that are so hyper-aware of, you know, the perils of pushing your kids into sports that they're kind of, I'm going to be really hands-off and make sure that he loves the game first.
I don't think LeBron and Savannah have been like those helicopter parents at all. I don't think LeBron has done that. I mean, both of his kids were kind of late bloomers in a lot of ways. Like, you know, Bryce is going to be a junior in high school. He's kind of just now coming into his own. You know, Bronny, as a freshman in high school, was coming off the bench at Sierra Canyon, wasn't playing a lot. So I don't think he's been the guy who kind of like hovered and said, you got to be just like me. And I think that's what you hear about people when they talk about Bronny, is Bronny wants this, you know. It's not he's doing it for dad or for his NBA dreams or whatever. Like, Bronny wants this. And I think that, to me, is what you'll see. And I think Bryce's other son is the same way. So, you know, I don't think – I mean, the presence of the greatest player of all time in your house probably pushes you to a certain extent in and of itself. But I haven't gotten a sense that LeBron has, you know, kind of overdone it with Bronny at all. If anything, I think he's allowed Bronny to kind of blossom on his own and kind of do what he wants to do. And I think you're seeing that hunger from Bronny as he's evolved into a player who's worthy of a scholarship with the school that, you know, has a chance to go to the NCAA tournament.
Myron, this was great, man. Thanks for taking the time to do this today. We really appreciate it. It's a very cool story. It's a very cool piece that you wrote at ESPN. Thanks again for coming on.
All right, thank you.
That's Myron Metcalf from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Could you imagine earning $10 million as a collegiate freshman?
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
It'd be pretty cool. I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
I think I missed my window.
Yeah, you missed
my
window.
My college eligibility is up.
Yeah, and also everything else that allows Bronny
I, too,
James to
am
that.
The son of a basketball legend. Mm. Actually, I don't even think my dad knew the rules of basketball, but that's fine.
Did you know LeBron didn't let his kids, when they were younger, play football or hockey?
I heard about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a purely safety thing. He wanted them in basketball and soccer.
Because there's been a lot of talk about why LeBron was never registered or enrolled in
Doesn't
football.
Soccer have a ton of concussions?
I think there's a risk inherent in every sport.
Yeah.
I think that as...
Soccer does, though, because you've got those head-to-head clashes.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw it
the other day with the Whitecaps.
But I think for the obvious reasons, especially youth football and youth hockey, there's the actual physical engagement, right? Mm-hmm. The hitting of it all. But a lot of people have always said, how was LeBron never geared towards football?
Right.
Imagine trying to defend him as a tight end or a wide receiver.
A tight end would be incredible.
It would be virtually impossible. He's an athlete. He's a freak physically and athletically. And then...
Yeah, he made a mistake going into basketball, I think.
Yeah, it didn't really paid off.
I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah. But it's an interesting story. Sometimes when we say interesting stories, I feel like we're trying to compel you to think that it's interesting. If you don't, that's fine. But this is such a unique story. That's the compelling part of it. And that's what makes it really interesting.
What's unique about it?
That someone's son in basketball, that we're going to have the father-son thing. It's just never even been a remote possibility.
We had it in hockey with Gordie Howe and his kids.
And we had it in baseball with Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr.
Right.
But basketball has just never even been close to being done. And L.A. now, if it wasn't already, it becomes the epicenter for hoops going into next season. I know that Wemby going to San Antonio is going to have a ton of focus on it as well. But you've got LeBron, still the king of the court, and still in L.A., which is a basketball city through and through.
Mm-hmm.
And then right down the street at USC, and as you pointed out, not the traditional basketball power. They only have two jerseys retired in USC basketball history.
Who are they?
Harold Miner,
mm-hmm.
Baby Jordan, back in the 90s, and DeMar DeRozan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this is a... It's funny because we asked the question, like, how good really is Bronny? And the overall consensus is good, but not a generational talent.
He's a generational icon. I really wonder how this is all going to go.
Yeah.
Especially for LeBron with the Lakers, because what if the Lakers get to a point where they're like, we need to move on.
Well, the final
We need
part
to move
of-
on. We can't have, we need to move on from you, let alone like, being forced to draft your son, because Bronny, based on some mock drafts that I've seen, is, and who knows, right? We're talking about the 2024 draft, late first round pick.
That's the other key part of this. Why I say the most intriguing thing I think I've ever seen in basketball is because of what Myron brought up at the very end of that hit. Do you draft the kid so that you can get the dad? Because that's the dangling carrot in all of this, is that if Bronny James comes out in the draft, and maybe he's not even a first-round pick, but you've got a late first-round pick. Are you taking him knowing that you've got an infinitely better chance of having LeBron on your team in the future?
Yeah.
That's crazy chip to play.
A few people texting in. Sorry, we should have clarified this. LeBron did play high school football, and he was really good.
Yeah, but I'm saying like...
But he didn't choose it. He didn't choose it.
He chose basketball.
He didn't choose to go to the NFL.
Yeah.
He was an incredible player as a high school football player and definitely would have gone to the NFL.
Well, I mean, there was collegiate programs that were lined up to get him.
Yeah.
Play both sports. You can play as much basketball as you want. You can play football in your spare time.
And he's like, how about not college?
Well, he didn't do it because he didn't want to get hurt.
Yeah.
That's all.
Do we have any Ask Us Anythings here? Here's one from Tanbeer, because Halford never has any flagged. Ask us anything. Is it harder for you guys to be excited for goalie prospects like Silas because they are so unpredictable? They can have two great seasons and then fall off a cliff for a couple of seasons and then make a heroic comeback like Bobrovsky. Absolutely, for me. Now, Laddie's going to hate that opinion. But for me, I don't have the goalie knowledge that guys like Woodley and Greg pretend to have. I mean, just they have. I don't have it, right? And so I don't get excited by blips, right? It was not long ago that half this market was ready to trade Demko and have Spencer Martin as the starter.
Yeah,
now
that was good. Those were good
all
times.
He does is win.
All he does is win hockey games.
I was willing to entertain the notion of trading Demko at parts of last season because the Canucks needed to do some stuff.
It wasn't because you're bullish on Spencer Martin.
It wasn't because I was bullish on Spencer Martin. I thought he was playing well, but I wasn't sitting there going like, yes, he's the starter. It amazes me how quickly people are ready to anoint a goalie, a starting goalie, and run another guy out of town based on short sample sizes. And it gets a little boring to keep saying short sample size, small sample size, sure, whatever you want to say. But like, you should know that you need to do a lot more than a string of even like 20, 30 games, which is a long time, right? Like, when you think about it, 20, 30 games, you play well in the NHL. It's quite a long time. But the Canucks went into this season with like very little in terms of proven NHL goaltending behind Thatcher Demko.
Yeah.
And look how it played out when Demko got hurt. It was a disaster. And then you're like, how did it all go so wrong? Well, because they've got like a combined 20 games of NHL experience. One of them's from Rancho Cucamonga.
It's true.
You can never trust goalies from Rancho Cucamonga.
Leather enthusiast.
Because there's only been one.
I got one from Colin in Tawasin. It's an Ask Us Anything. AUA, if you were an NBA or a professional football manager, would you wear a suit on the sideline, or would you be the more casual tracksuit type of coach? Here's the thing. I think
Robin slippers.
Robin slippers is a choice.
That'd be his thing.
I go off the board.
bunny slippers.
Yep.
I think, in the NFL, I'll go to take it a step further. Remember back in the day when everyone wore a shirt and tie or a suit or Tom Landry's hat?
Yeah.
It looked cool. I don't know why. I'm not saying it's like, oh, be a professional, wear a suit. I haven't worn a suit since like someone died, I think.
I don't have a suit anymore.
If I can't wear a hat, yeah. I don't. Yeah. So football, I want it brought back. Football Manager's European. Yeah, I think it just looks cool. I don't know why, but it just
everyone
does.
Looks good in a suit. I mean, like, you can't go wrong with a suit in any situation.
Right, but the notion of it is dumb because the comfort level is minimal, right? Yeah, suit in the shower is no good. But the thing is like, if you were to put it in baseball, it would look awful.
Really?
For some reason. Yeah, because the baseball manager wearing the baseball uniform,
I don't know,
works.
If he was dressed like a 30s gangster smoking a cigar back there, that looked pretty cool.
But they've always, like, here's the thing.
I just can't even imagine it.
I know, because all the other sports got away from it. Like, NFL coaches used to wear suits, and now they don't.
A lot of
all
baseball
managers,
coaches don't wear the full, or at least they wear something on top of it to cover.
But they all wear baseball pants.
Like a hoodie or something like
that?
Yeah,
like a hoodie. Because there was actually a story, there was a sports writer in St. Louis that would get on the manager of the Cardinals right now, Marmol. Because he never wore he always had a hoodie on over top of everything.
Sure.
So this sports writer unfortunately passed away recently. So for the next game, he wore the full uniform. He took the hoodie off. That was a nice
but they all still wear the pants and the stirrups and cleats, right?
Most of them that I've seen.
I think it's because dugouts are so dirty.
Yeah, wearing a suit
there's
tough.
Like spit there and, you know, like sunflower seeds everywhere.
Tobacco juice all over your wingtips. That would be bad.
Plus, you never know when you got to get out there and slide in.
Does anyone chew tobacco anymore in Major League Baseball?
Oh, yeah. I'm
absolutely.
Sure they just probably not publicly.
Right.
Like, you have to be, like, they're like, if you're going to chew.
I thought they outlawed it at one point.
They did, but it's still happening, and it's big in the NHL circles as well. NHL Twitter account posted a picture of Jonathan Quick walking into the stadium the other day, zoomed in on the red Solo cup he was holding. It's a red Solo cup. What do you think's in that red Solo cup?
Was it Ryan O'Reilly? They had pictures on the flight back from when they won the Stanley Cup in Boston. And he had a tin like on his tray table on the airplane. It's pretty prevalent. I think the understanding is behind closed doors, they're like, do not publicly do that.
Right.
Right. So be very aware.
One more Ask Us Anything. This is Unsigned. Morning, guys. What is one sport that you had no interest in before your journalism career that you're forced to follow because of your career and now genuinely enjoy? Honestly, there isn't one.
I hate
to have that answer, but I've never
been. You're going
to
say pickleball.
I enjoy it, but I wasn't forced to follow. No, yeah, I wasn't forced to follow or wasn't
voluntary.
Forced to play it. There are a few sports that you'll notice don't get a lot of talk on our show just because we're not all that into it. And one of them I would say is tennis. We'll talk tennis when the Canadians are in it, but we never really talked about the golden era, the big three of tennis, like just in and of itself.
Yeah. I actually do have an answer to this though.
Oh, okay.
MMA. That I got four. When I first,
did you get into it though?
Yeah, and you know why? The athletes, the fighters, were the most interesting people to talk to and interview out of any professional sport
because they're not your everyday Joes.
It was
they all have a history.
Yeah, there's a lot. Obviously, someone that fights for a living is going to have a more unique background and come up story than say a guy that went into the Western Hockey League and then got drafted by an NHL team, right?
It's I've never been different. Into MMA, but I am fascinated by the athletes. What is your background? What has led you to become a professional fighter?
Yeah, we also got – so it was – candidly, is when I was working at Bodog, and we had the Bodog fight thing, is I got foisted upon – the MMA beat got foisted upon me. You remember this?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God.
Did you go to a lot of press conferences for that? MMA press conferences are wild.
We were hosting it, so I got pretty good. Like, I got to do a sit-down interview with Royce Gracie, which was really cool. It was like an hour uninterrupted. That was kind of – I mean, he told some crazy stuff. Like, early in his fight career – he was so determined to never tap out that he had his arm snapped. And he's like, that's how I will lose this fight. Or choke to the point of being unconscious, never even considering tapping. And I'm like, that's a crazy thing to me. Because I would tap out and be like, I don't want to black out and potentially die.
Yeah, you'd enter the fight, you're like, I'm done.
Yeah.
If you ever attend an MMA event, and I have attended a few, my one thought all the time is when the guys are walking into the ring just thinking, the courage that it takes, the courage or maybe a bit of naivety, maybe a bit of stupidity even, the courage that it takes to go in there and fight the kind of people that could literally kill someone in a fight.
We used to
have... They could kill someone in a fight,
right? We used to book this guy, he was a fighter out of St. Louis. He was a roofer by trade. He had a super long record that was 500. Like, he had like 37 wins and 37 losses. Greatest guy, best salt of the earth guy I'd ever met in my life. He knew that he got booked because he could stand there and throw punches in, and he had like, I'm not joking, like rice paper for skin, and he would bleed. He's like, that's what they pay me to do.
Right.
It's like, they pay me to stand in there, and he's like, I know I can take a punch.
And
I know
the fans love it.
And the fans love it.
Yeah.
He had no aspirations or desires to be a world champion or win titles. He knew that he was going to make a living because people liked watching him eat punches, throw punches, and he could bleed on contact. And he was...
There are boxers like that, the brawlers, right? Like, they'll book even on the undercard just to give the fans something.
The greatest, and then he's like, and then I go back and I'm a roofer. Like, he was the greatest guy, and he was always on trips with us. And he's like, this is great. I get to go to Costa Rica. I get to go to Russia.
I'm on a roof.
Right. It was fantastic. But that guy, it was great insight. And you don't run into those kind of athletes, quite frankly, you don't run into those kind of people doing our jobs where you're talking to, well, idiots and dogs. To a lesser degree. Okay, final hour of the show coming up here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Back to the NBA we go. Steve Ashburner is going to join us. Longtime columnist, now a senior writer with NBA.com. We will get him to answer the question, how much trouble are the Miami Heat in right now after losing two consecutive games to the Boston Celtics? That's coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.